Welcome to Frenzy on the Podcast, right here on Movie City News. I'm Noah Faris, I'm your host as always. This is the last podcast of the year, so I will see you all in 2009. Today we've got Peter Bushman. He's the screenwriter of Che. And whatever you feel about Che, you should definitely see the movie. This is one of the experiences of 2008 that everyone must see. Whether you like it, love it, hate it, it's just a wonderful, wonderful experience. Peter Bushman is one of the guys behind it. I mean, he's the screenwriter. So let's talk to him. Congratulations, first of all, on Che.
Thanks, Noah.
It was, I really enjoyed it a lot, and,
excellent.
You know, I actually managed to sit through it in one sitting for 4 hours, so I'm proud of myself.
That's right. No, it's funny, you know, we always thought, initially, when I got involved at one point in the process, Steven had Soderbergh had said to me that he wanted to go from the one movie that I was screenplay that I was writing for a single movie into two movies.
Mm-hmm.
And when I split apart the story into the different sections, his sort of rise in Cuba in the first part and his fall in Bolivia in the second, I always envisioned them as two movies. And then as we got closer to the festivals, Stephen became interested in the idea of just seeing them back to back and as a single event. And you know, most of the time, in most places in the world, and in the U.S., this will be shown as two separate movies. But, you know, so we always thought, well, there might be a few people that's sort of hardcore that want to sort of see them and have that experience back to back. But we never knew, you know, what kind of audience that they would get. And then we were really surprised that the L.A. show road show sold out completely.
Mm-hmm.
And the New York sold out for the weekend and sold very well throughout the week, if not selling out. So now we're extending the road show because it seems like there are people who, you know, who sort of gear up for it, you know.
Yeah. I definitely don't think you would have to watch it back to back, or you know, but I think it, you know, I think it clearly shows when you watch it back to back how kind of mirrored the stories are, you know. And I don't know if you'd wait a couple weeks or months. I think it would still be effective, but I think seeing it, you know, back to back, it really, you know, brings the point home that, you know, this is basically a very similar story, just, you know, everything that went right the first time kind of doesn't go right this time.
Yeah, it's really, when I first came on to the project 4 years ago, I had actually initially was approached with this project about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't work on it at the time, but I did a lot of the research about Che and became fascinated with the story. But I couldn't. I had to do another job at the time and couldn't get involved in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, they developed a script by Benjamin Vanderveen that was just the Bolivia story. And I came back on 4 years ago. They were sort of coming up with a new take on the movie. And after having done a lot of sort of the Che research, for me, I felt like there was a big problem of just showing Bolivia, because I felt that most people didn't really understand, didn't really have much sense of who Che was.
Right.
And his incredible rise in the Cuban Revolution is so much a part of his story, in understanding how he sort of reached this iconic place in our history, and so without that, I felt like we were missing just a huge gap, and also having some understanding of how he thought he could pull off Bolivia. Once you understand the context of the Cuban Revolution, the incredible odds that he and Fidel were up against, and the fact that they were down to, you know, they got on a leaky boat and with 80 guys and go to Cuba, you know, nearly get wiped out right away. The government knows they're coming. The government has a 40,000 man army backed by the U.S. military, and they're wiped out to 12 men, and this becomes the nucleus of the rebel army that ends up winning in 2 years. You know, that's that's such an incredible against all odds victory, and
absolutely
to have some sense of what they achieved in that had gives you some sense of why Che thought he could go to Bolivia with 30 guys and start a revolution.
Right. Well, I wanted to ask you, you said that you'd been approached 10 years ago, you started working on it 4 years ago. Did you work with Terrence Malick at all when he was involved with the project?
I came involved after Terrence had already stepped off the project, and he came back in as a director. It was at that point that Stephen was sort of trying to figure out a new take on the material that I got back involved in the project, basically.
Right. And how did you ultimately decide... And was it your decision, which sections of his life to use and which?
Well, I came in about 4 years ago. I got into a room with Stephen and Benicio for a couple of days. And at this point, I had just said to Laura, the producer, just to remind you, I've already done all this research about Che. If Stephen just wants to use me as a sounding board, as a screenwriter who knows a lot about Che, I'm happy to get into a room with him. And so... they called me back a couple of weeks later, and I flew to New York. I met with Benicio and Stephen. I had met with Benicio briefly 10 years ago when I was approached with this, but we didn't really know each other that well.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephen sort of, my biggest issue with coming in was this whole, what do you show part about it. And I felt that the Bolivian was fascinating and an important part of the story. I just felt it was, we had to see more. We had to have a sense of how Che became Che, basically, and the Cuban Revolution is something that a lot of people might think they have a sense of what happened, but I think when you actually delve into the history and really see how it unfolded, most people, I don't think, have any idea of how remarkable a story that is. And so after sort of a couple of days in that room, Stephen and Benicio and I came up with a new take on the movie, which was going to track his rise in Cuba, his fall in Bolivia, simultaneously in the same screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would cut back and forth to different times period, and the stories would unfold. And we also wanted to layer into that a trip that Che took to New York, which was something that Stephen always was wedded to. I think he just loved the idea of, from a filmmaker standpoint, I think he just loved the idea of seeing Che at his most iconic place in his career. So he's wearing he's got the whole wardrobe and the look that we come to associate when we think about Che Guevara.
Yeah, and the United Nations.
Riding through the streets, exactly, and riding through the streets of New York and being on these U.S. TV shows and doing the cocktail party circuit and being followed everywhere he goes by these people who absolutely hate and hate him and are trying to kill him. And that there was just something very fascinating for Stephen, I think, about that time. And so for me, I think that for the rest of the movie, I like showing that time because it shows the place that Che had sort of gotten to in his life and that he was willing to basically give up in order to go back into the mountains and try his hand at revolution again, basically.
Well, it's interesting because that whole segment in New York, is kind of him being cognizant of the fact that he's a symbol at that point.
Mm-hmm.
There's even that part where he's about to go on TV and they ask him, do you want makeup? And he's like, no. And then he thinks for a moment and he's like, okay, maybe a little powder.
And at that moment he actually sees that one of the, I don't know if you saw the moment, but he actually sees one of the guys he's getting his makeup on, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those just classic Che moments where it's like, no, no, no. Of course he doesn't want makeup. That's, he comes from a very sort of masculine world.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly he sees, I might not have the advantage if I don't have makeup. And maybe a little bit of powder when he sees that, the people that we seated across from are doing the same thing.
Yeah. But it's interesting because it's like he's aware of the fact that he there's that underlying, subtext of he's aware of the fact that he's a symbol now and the way he projects himself is important. And it's interesting because in the beginning of the second part, he's wearing a costume to get into Bolivia and it's almost like he's trying to strip himself of that symbol status.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
That's true. I hadn't thought about that. That's very true. It was not a, I hadn't, intended that to come across, but now that you mention it, I think it's very true. I think it's very, in a sense, that is, and because that is exactly on a character level what is happening at that moment when he does go to Bolivia. I think is he's leaving all of that behind, because it is very interesting to sort of watch New York play out while the Cuba story is unfolding, and sort of going from the cocktail parties on the West Side to the jungles of, to see how it all happened in the jungles of Cuba, and in sort of the poverty and all that. And it's interesting, but here, I got sidetracked just to sort of finish the one point. So initially, right, what happened with the, and I want to come back to this point, just to finish answering your question about how the screenplay came about.
Right, yeah.
So I initially wrote one screenplay that had those three different storylines in the same one, let's say, 2.5-3 hour movie. And then what happened is that we were a month before shooting the UN footage, and Steven just said, you know, I don't think we're doing either story justice. You know, in order to sort of to fit all those stories into a single screenplay like that, he felt we were having to make changes in history and do things in a way that just didn't feel as real to him, the stories, and so they weren't breathing as much as he liked. So that's when he came up with the idea of we would shoot the New York section, because we already had lined up the UN, and we didn't know if we'd be able to get back into the UN, and it still looked the way it looked when it was about to go under renovation, and at this point it still looked the way it did when Che was there.
Mm-hmm.
So we shot the New York section, then I went off, and Steven said, okay, just go, you know, write a single script about Cuba, and then write a single script about Bolivia, and that's when I went off and did that part of the movie, and that's the idea was always two movies. And then, again, it wasn't until, you know, we were really approaching Cannes that Steven sort of came up with this crazy idea of doing them both together. And it's funny, when people, there are a lot of people when they see them together that say, yes, you know, they, as you said, they like that.
Mm-hmm.
People who see them, you know, even seeing them one night and then the next night, I think would be fine too, you know. But it's nice, I think, to see them somewhat close together.
Yeah.
But anyway, so what happened is that's initially how, you know, those sections came about in terms of what to focus on. We always knew we wanted to tell Bolivia. I think I kind of came in and really was pushing for showing the Cuban story. And Steven always had this sort of soft spot in his heart for the New York footage. And we hadn't really figured out how to intertwine the New York footage with that first screenplay,
mm-hmm,
until post-production, basically. It wasn't until the editing room, and we did a little bit of reshoots, not many, mostly just for voices, voiceover work, not even technically reshoots, but where we decided to extend that Lisa Howard interview in New York, and the Blonde Reporter, and basically show and to sort of guide us and to use it as a way to take us through the Cuban story, so we understand Che's journey a bit more through that, and you have more of a sense of Che the symbol at that point in his career, looking back on how he got to where he is.
Yeah.
And then, as you say, getting, I love that what you said before about just, you know, literally taking apart the symbol and,
yeah,
and getting into disguise, and then sort of, you know, heading back to, I think, for him, I just think that I think for Che, we can't show every part of his character, obviously, in these movies, you know, but I do think that for Che, that he looked back on the Cuban Revolution always as this very clear, satisfying part of his life, you know, where just the oneness between the rebel army, the rebels and the people, and how they the people initially were suspicious of them, they eventually win their trust,
mm-hmm,
and come together, and Cuba was as much a political victory as it was a military victory, and it was winning over even soldiers in the army too. That whole process, I think, was such a high for him, and all his ideas about communism seemed to sort of coalesce. Well, in that adventure.
Yeah, and you could see, you know, in the Bolivia section how, you know,
I mean, he's trying to recapture that same kind of
camaraderie
that's not there this time around.
And it's just, you know, there were so many other factors that went into the Cuban victory.
Mm-hmm.
Things that Che, I mean, some things that Che probably didn't fully appreciate. Like for example, the fact that before Fidel left Cuba, he, among other Cubans, helped put in place an urban network that was already there that could support the rebels with arms and supplies, and so they were never completely isolated in the mountains because there was already this very organized network in place, basically, for them.
Mm-hmm.
And in because I think Jay always had problems with the urban network personally. He didn't get along with them so well, and I think he always underestimated them a bit and their power. And so when he was in Bolivia and he sort of let Monge, the leader of the Bolivian Communist Party, decide to, you know, when he realized that he had to break ties with Monge, that really sort of isolated Che in a way that I don't think he fully appreciated how debilitating that could be.
Yeah.
Especially if they were discovered early, before they had a chance to sort of reestablish ties to the cities in some other way.
Well, I wanted to ask you also, you know, while we're talking a little bit about the history, is, you know, how did you go about researching, you know, a film like this? You know, where do you start?
It was really, you know, I had done this research initially, at least, which gave me some sense of Che's, you know, and I had read a few books on Che, and, you know, I actually had in my head already, like, as I said, the sections of his life that I felt particularly like I wanted to see. But I really had to go back and research everything again in order to really write this thing. And it was pretty daunting. You know, it's amazing, though, if you just devote yourself, you know, a certain number of hours every single day to reading about a subject, it's amazing how much you can get down in, let's say, a month of solid research, basically, if you're doing it 6-7 hours a day. You know, and then on top of that, what we would do is we took a number of trips to Havana, basically, where we would speak with anyone who knew Che and who was with him during this part of his life, the ones that we focused on.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of survivors from the Bolivian expedition who are down there who we spoke to. We spoke to his wife, who was with him in that last Las Villas campaign.
Mm-hmm.
in the Cuban countryside in the first part of the movie. And we spoke to a lot of other people who were with him then, too. And then we spoke to a number of people who were with him in New York on that trip to try to get some sense of what happened there, too. So it was, you know, we went all over the world and we interviewed people. We interviewed people in Miami and Paris, Bolivia. I wasn't at all those interviews, but I had the ones that I wasn't at, I always had access to the material.
Mm-hmm.
Because Benicio and Steven had already been developing a screenplay about Bolivia, they knew a lot about Bolivia, in particular Benicio, who's been researching this thing since he got involved with 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of his focus was on Bolivia. And so he had a lot of information in his own head. Certainly I started with the two books that we bought the rights to, the Bolivian Diaries, being Che's first-hand account of Bolivia, and Che's book on the Cuban Revolution, which is based on his personal diary from that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I mean, you've done all this research, and I wonder, you know, you've probably have so much more material that didn't go into the film, you know, and is it hard for you to kind of, you know, see the movie finished now, and it's like, where do I put this, all this stuff I learned?
You know, it's funny. I have done a few other historical scripts that they haven't gotten made, though, you know, and so, so I've had some experience, though, writing historical screenplays. When I first got involved in this project, I had just done a screenplay about Alexander the Great, and it was not one that got made ultimately. It was one that was a competing project with the Oliver Stone movie.
Oh, was this the Baz Luhrmann one?
Or? Well, we sold it. We talked to Baz. He read it. We had a meeting with Baz about this one, and eventually we sold ours to for Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, right, yeah.
And they did The Aviator, and Oliver Stone did his version. And so I'm used to, like, all the... I did so much research for that. I did so much research for that project, and I guess I got used to having an appreciation for how much you cut out of any screenplay that you work on, even ones that aren't, you know, historically based.
Mm-hmm.
So I always love figuring out that I can lose a whole section of a screenplay, definitely. Because it's usually clarifying. I just finished a script up for Paramount that Steven Soderbergh is executive producing. That this is called Making Jack Falcone. That's another true story based on an undercover FBI agent who infiltrated the mob. But what was so fascinating about him is he juggled multiple identities simultaneously. So he would had five different cell phones, five different wardrobes. You know, he gets a phone call, and suddenly, boom, he's a completely different person, and he would change ethnicity. Sometimes he'd be a Cuban, sometimes he'd be a Colombian. He was Cuban-born, actually. And then other times he'd be playing an Italian with the mom. And so that was one that, again, it was a chance to sort of actually work with the guy personally, whose story is based on, Jack Garcia. But I've done a lot of historical projects, and you get used to... you know, I guess you just get used to all the stuff that gets in your head that never makes it to the screen.
Right.
There were some moments that some babies definitely on the Chase story that would have been fun to have in here that I had to let go of.
Anything in particular that?
Well, you know, I used to have his arrival in with the grandma, where the grandma boat. That's the boat they take from Mexico to Cuba. That was in screenplay form, basically, which was to sort of to see the actual landing and see that thing, to see them get wiped out, the 12 men. It would have been fun to see that on screen and sort of a couple of other early moments of them sort of gathering their forces. But I realized why we just, you know, it was for story reasons and for financial reasons we had to cut it.
Right.
There's only so much. So much that Steven could make on the budget that we had, basically. So it's remarkable that he managed to get two parts out of it.
Right. Yeah.
For the price.
Well,
and so.
Was it difficult, you know, writing this film or even writing Alexander the Great? You know, for your own, you know, kind of biases to not come into play. You know, like how important is it to stay objective whenever you're researching something? I mean, Che is clearly a controversial figure, but...
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, obviously, you know, your own biases always come into it to anybody. With Alexander, when you're doing something like Alexander the Great, who lived so long ago, no one really cares anymore about him that much, you know, so there's really a lot of pressure off. You can pretty much do your version of Alexander... And you're not going to piss off that many people, a few scholars here and there. With the Chase story, it's a much different situation. Passions are obviously a lot higher. It's a lot more personal for a lot of people who experience Chase firsthand. So we set the bar higher on Chase than on any historical script I've written. You know, that was part of the reason why we divided it up into two movies, so we could really sort of stay true to history. Anytime you're crunching a story into a shorter amount of time, you have to do a lot of combining of characters and incidences, and we didn't really want to do that where we didn't have to in the Chase movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was challenging, but also at the end of the day, I think we have a movie that feels a lot more authentic for having sort of kept the bar that high. I always knew that we would be... So in particular, and you know, something I've quoted Stephen before on this, but he said to me at one point, he says, "I don't care if I know people are going to tell us that we should have put something in our movie. I'm prepared for that we didn't put in there. I'm prepared for some people to say they don't think we should have put this in the movie, which we did put in there. What I don't want people to tell us is that we didn't, that something didn't happen that we put in the movie.
Right.
So everything in these movies happened. And, you know, the big question of Che that sort of was our approach. And we wanted to create a person where if Che oversaw some executions in the mountains of Cuba, which he did, he oversaw about 15 executions, that, you know, usually people like the one who was shown in the movie,
mm-hmm.
Where you had people who were sort of selling out the rebels to the army or committing crimes in the rebel name, or usually in moments like that, and were executed. And so we felt it was crucial to show that and make sure that we did. In the New York section, when everyone's following Che around, calling him a murderer, an assassin, you know, we wanted to try to make sure we didn't put that issue under the rug of what happens in Havana after the revolution.
Yeah.
When Che oversaw the trial and executions of, you know, the numbers vary. It goes from anywhere from 100 people to, I've heard, 300 or 400 people in terms of estimates. They range. So we felt it was important to hear him address that at the UN when he says, you know, unapologetically, yes, we have executions. For Che, he was never apologetic about those executions.
Yeah.
And then also, one of the only composite characters in the story is the character of whose name is Alejandro. He's a CIA agent who's a Cuban exile, who's the guy who tracks Che down in Bolivia.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one person who, you know, we combined actually three different people to have someone who could follow him around the streets of New York to see him we see him briefly in the Cuban army, and then we follow him, and then he follows Che and is the antagonist in the Bolivian story. He's someone whose family was killed in Che's executions, and so he's the antagonist of the piece. But I felt it was important not to make him the villain of the piece, just to make him have someone with his own opinion and play him honestly, basically.
Yeah.
So that was our way of dealing with it, but dealing with those issues basically. But we're never going to satisfy it. Obviously.
Well, I thought a really interesting choice that you guys made was at the end of the first film,
mm-hmm.
you know, we don't see them in Havana, you know,
right.
and I thought it was like the All the President's Men ending a little bit, you know, where it's like, well,
mm-hmm.
you know, except a little bit different, because in the All the President's Men, you know, everybody knows what happened after that. And with this, you know, it's kind of like, you know, there's some differing accounts of what happened. So it's kind of like, you know, pick your poison.
Yeah, it's one of those things that we felt that the most, you know, it's one of those, it's tricky. I think, you know, it was Steven's decision. I remember at one point, you know, he said, I don't think we should go to Havana, basically. From a dramatic standpoint, in sort of, right, you know, you have to sort of at some point decide what you're going to focus on in this guy's life. Opening up Havana would have meant opening up a whole other part of the movie, and I don't think you could have done Bolivia and done Havana, basically.
Yeah. Definitely.
I just don't think you can. You know, you can't just do a little bit of Havana.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it becomes, you know, what movie, looking at the totality of Che's life, you know, what story do you ultimately want to tell? And I think that there are some people out there who would like to have told the story of let's see what happens in Havana, and that's completely valid. And you know, that's that if they wanted to make that movie, that's great. I can see a movie where that happens. And then you get into Fidel and Che's relationship once they take power, you know, relationship with the Soviet Union, with the United States. You can have the executions in there, have a take on those, and all that stuff.
That's a whole movie. Yeah.
That's a whole movie. Yeah, that could be a whole movie in and of itself. Certainly, I don't think we could have done Havana and done Bolivia And at the end of the day, it seemed like the two most definitive moments in Che's life was his, I think, when I look back on sort of the remarkable, sort of most cinematic moments, I think were the Cuban Revolution. It was the revolution itself, and Bolivia. Che met with a lot of mixed success once the revolution happened,
mm-hmm.
and he was trying to sort of steer the economy, and he was frustrated with the Soviets and Fidel, and he had some tension between them. And, he basically, it's a tricky time that at the end of the day, it would have felt like a movie in and of itself.
Yeah.
And for me, what was fascinating about Che is that he, as a man who had this experience in Cuba, he ran out and tried it again twice, once in the Congo and then again in Bolivia, and failed both times, but that I think that he felt most everything was clearest for him as an idealist. I think whenever you take power, once you take power, there's the realities of power that are always tricky for an idealist like Che.
Yeah.
All the sort of real decisions, practical decisions that have to get made once revolution is won. I just think it were tough when you see things as black and white as Che did, I think, in some ways. And so...
Well, you see that with a lot of revolutionary groups, especially, the SDS comes to mind, like during the Vietnam War. After the war was over, it's like, well, then now what do we do,
Yes.
And I could see that in Che's life, he just needs to be a revolutionary, kind of.
I think that that's right. I think that that's why he ran off, back to that, because he had a clarity, a moral clarity in that time that I think he craved,
mm-hmm.
once he was trying to make a go as a bureaucrat and as the head of the economy in Cuba and as this leader. I think he just missed those days. And the Cuban Revolution was such a great, wonderful moment in his life, defining moment. I think he just sort of went back for that. And I think that at the end of the day, if I can speak for also Stephen and Benicio and the producer Laura Bickford, I think that it seemed like that most defining thing about Che, if we had to pick and choose,
mm-hmm.
more so than what happened in Havana, was here's a guy who had this experience, reached the pinnacle of fame and this iconic status, said goodbye to all of it, and said goodbye to his family, to go back and try and to give himself again on two separate occasions, but we only see the one, Bolivia,
mm-hmm.
for the revolution. That seemed to be, at the end of the day, more who, if we had to pick and choose, and we had to sort of say, we can't do everything, that, more than his experience once the revolution was won for us, seemed to define who he was. And not everyone's going to agree with that choice. But that was our decision.
Well, I think that whether you're a Che fan or, you detest Che, I think that the bottom line is that this movie shows that Che, whether you like it or not, was a revolutionary, And I think that's the overarching message.
And we always try to be objective.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very much, we've really tried to, it's like I heard one. I mean, so everyone has different ideas. Some people think that we've been remarkably objective. Some people say we're putting a halo around Che, and so it's really. I mean, it just depends on who you talk to. There was one reviewer I read who was from Cuba, and he was not predisposed to like Che or Fidel, and he said if he had left after the first half of the movie, he would have felt that. That we had romanticized Che a bit. And they said, but after the second half, he left feeling surprised at how even-handed he thought we were. To show Che's, the unraveling of Che in Bolivia, as clearly as we did, in a lot of ways, that's the unraveling of his myth as a guerrilla fighter, and you know the world, everyone in the world feared him, and then he has this defeat in Bolivia, and that is due partly to his own choices. And I mean, we see the man stab a mule at one point.
Yeah,
he's so frustrated.
I think that if you have a natural inclination to, you know, to hate Che or like Che, I don't think there's anything in this movie that's really gonna, you know, change your mind significantly. But it'll give you a better picture of what he was doing, actually doing. Yeah.
I think so too.
We could talk forever, but I'm gonna ask you one last question. And it's something I ask everybody. So, what are some of your favorite movies?
Well, I hate to say, sound typical, but I grew up in the 70s, with all the great Godfathers, Apocalypse Now, Scorsese movies, Raging Bull. I mean, I always thought that you could make, I grew up thinking that it was, that's what you did in movies. Movies were complicated, dark, interesting, that you could make movies out of characters who were that way. And initially I started as a playwright, and then sort of worked my way into screenwriting in my 20s, with that Alexander screenplay toward the end of my 20s. I entered into the movie business not really having a realistic sense 10 years ago of what you supposedly can and can't do.
Right.
And so I've always been attracted to the material that, it took me time to realize is actually the tough stuff to get made, and often doesn't get made, basically. And so this was, to work on an opportunity, to be in a situation like this where the only person we had to please were, the only person I really had to please was Steven Soderbergh at the end of the day, and Benicio, and just sort of have carte blanche freedom to do whatever I wanted to do in terms of, from an artistic standpoint. There was nothing holding me back from attempting anything that I wanted to try. That was just a really refreshing, wonderful thing to experience.
Yeah, and Steven Soderbergh is one of the greatest filmmakers currently working, I think. So
he's great, and he was phenomenal to work with. He's very he's a real collaborator. Often when with someone in his track record, you never know what kind of collaborator that person's going to be. And I think partly what makes Steven so great as an artist is his ability to collaborate with people and to open himself up to challenges to his own thoughts, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And he encourages a writer like me and Benicio it all becomes an argument where we can all get into a hotel room and go through the script and argue about the scenes one by one. And, at some point that's what we did with the screenplay. It was really, it was great to have that kind of relationship.
Well, the greatest compliment I can give to you as someone who's such a big fan of movies of the 70s is that this movie feels like it was made in the 70s during that period. It just fits in so well. So,
and thanks very much.
Anyway, well, thank you so much for talking to me. I really appreciate
it. My pleasure.
That's all the time we have for the podcast for this week. I'd like to thank Peter Bushman. Great, great interview, I thought. I hope you think so, too. Che is playing in New York now, but it doesn't really open up until January 24th. It's going to be in two parts, Che Part 1, Che Part 2, and I believe they're opening a week apart. And you could also get them on demand, on video on demand, IFC on demand. And as always, you can email me at noah@moviecitynews.com. Thanks for listening so much, and I can't wait to bring you more great interviews in the new year.